I want to welcome you to Harvest Community Church. If we have not met before, my name is Hans, and I get to serve here as one of the pastors at Harvest. And we are entering into a new series, a new time. This will carry us for the rest of the summer and a little beyond. I think we have nine weeks of somebody whistling at me. Received. Thank you very much. And so this series you'll see is called Good Neighboring, and I want to tell you why we are beginning this series as opposed to any other series that we could be preaching at this time. And part of it is because it has to do with your prayers. At the beginning of the year, we asked our church family to be in prayer for us as we got ready for an elder retreat that was coming in February. And those prayers were for us individually, being us as individual members of Harvest, for our leadership, for the elders and the elder retreat in particular. And many of you were part of that kind of daily prayer journey as we got to the retreat. And we spent about 2 days together discussing our church family, the things we love about our church family, the things we would hope to see God do. And as we concluded that time, we had a significant burden that our church is two things. One, incredibly hospitable. The amount of stories of just people inviting others in, caring for those in their church family, providing for needs of one another, and really and truly demonstrating love was significant. And we saw that as a big strength of the members and people of Harvest. On the other side of that equation was, as we are still hospitable, we wondered why we struggled in the areas of outreach and evangelism. Now, I don't mean having outreach, but specifically having people far from God in our lives that we care deeply about and want to see God do a work of transformation, a transformation in them to bring them into a right relationship with the Father. So we had both of these things. And we thought, okay, well, on the one side, incredibly hospitable. On the other side, we have struggled to be demonstrably evangelistic. And I don't mean in that you have to be annoyingly persistent, but just bold and courageous to the people that God has put in our lives. And so the idea came about for us as a church family that we need to spend time as a church around the idea of what it means to be a good neighbor. And this is not just a sermon series on being a good neighbor. This is what we hope would be a culture strengthening for Harvest, convictional strengthening for Harvest. Not just, hey, we're going to do a series, hope it changes your life, let's move on. Because I've been in a lot of churches, you have as well, and sermon series don't save. They don't, like, very many of you, you kind of churn them, you go, hey, I think that was a good series, and then 2 years from now, you're like, I don't know, Courtney was reading me a verse even last night or this morning, and she goes, where's that from? And I was like, She said, I think that's from Ecclesiastes, because I preached it, I should know. But they, you know, if the one preaching it has to think it is there, then the one hearing it might have a little bit harder of an issue making that connection. And so along with just preaching about being a good neighbor, what we want to be able to do is provide actual structures on how God might use us as a church to strengthen what we are good at, to bring about an area where we want to see transformation. Because we do want to be a church full of people, men, women, and children who live every day like people matter to God. That is not something that I think any of you have to question on a test or intellectually assent to. You know this. But then there's the knowing and the living. And we want to be a church full of people who live like people matter to God, who will not just declare it, but both declare it and live it both. So this series is the beginning of what we hope is a 2 or 3 year process of God changing us. Changing us as a church. Because we want to be a church where anybody in spring, or maybe even globally, could go, not anybody globally, that'd be a little hard, but even amongst the nations, maybe in Jinotega, Nicaragua, where they could say, I know that church, and I know those people, and I know what they care about. Because you will find, as you read New Testament epistles, that churches have reputations. As you read the letters from the angels in Revelation, you will find that churches have reputations. And we have begun already, since that retreat in February as elders, asking that God would grow our reputation as a church that cares deeply about those who are far from Him. So that's what you get to hear as we begin this idea together. And there will be, throughout the coming, by God's grace, years, invitations and opportunities to strengthen, even for you as a disciple of Jesus, what that might mean and how that might look. And we start by sharing stories. In fact, everybody who is going to preach this series is going to tell the story of how God changed them. Jesse reminded me of that this week, and I said, thank you very much for reminding me. I was already going to do that because I wasn't sure what else to share, but now I get to strengthen it even more. Now, you have heard these stories in my life before, but I want to tell you about a man named Steve. Now, if your name is here and you're Steve, great. I already have an affection for you. But there's a man in my life named Steve, and God has been gracious to give me many men and women who have poured themselves into me to build me up into the person that you see. But Steve showed up at a unique time in my life as a bratty high schooler. I did not know at that time that I needed something, but Steve did. And so as I was a freshman and a sophomore, and my family and I lived in some apartments off of 249, Steve would show up as we started this new student ministry thing, and he would knock on the door, and he would get me and bring me. I had no clue he was coming. He would just come and see if I was there, and if I was, he would bring me to what the student ministry was doing that night. It was something called The Wave, and it met on Tuesdays, not Wednesdays, because Steve never wanted to try and be trendy. So he's like, other churches meet on Wednesdays, we're going to meet and do student stuff on Tuesdays. So it was Tuesday nights, not Wednesday nights, and he built this, what became this huge outreach, and I was one. The thing I remember the most is that Steve would come, actually, when he would come look for me, one time he came to my friend's apartment where I was playing video games, knocked on the door there, and said, I'm here for Hans. Now, for one, imagine being a parent where a random dude shows up to the door, and they're here not for your son, but for your son's friend. And for whatever reason, that parent was like, Hans is right here. Hans, somebody's here for you. He's here to take you. Yeah, we have movies about that, right? Like, we don't do that. But he did. Now, the freshman and sophomore Hans, Guger is how you pronounce my last name. For those of you who just look at it and never want to pronounce it, it's Guger. So the freshman and sophomore Hans was not somebody who was much trouble. And I mean that. In junior high, I did get in one fight and I got suspended. I did not even throw a good punch. I hurt my hand doing it. But that was kind of it. In fifth grade, I had to pay a fine for helping to being a part of getting a locker stuck by sticking a coin in it. So, real big problem creator. And so, the reputation I had would be what you would find as generally fine. Not a big issue. That might be the same as some of yours. Like, my parents never thought of me as some troublemaker. In fact, they kind of just left me to myself. My mom would have said, my kids raised themselves. Now, it wasn't like latchkey kids, which is like, go do whatever, but both my parents worked, and in general, we made good decisions. And so, there I was, though, heading to the student ministry outreach because my cousin Evan told me I should go, and Steve kept picking me up to bring me. And over time, God changed me. And this is how, in a specific time, in a specific way. And so there was this pastor he brought in, because Steve learned very early that you needed to hear from other people. And so rather than him speak often, he would bring people in to speak. And so he brought this pastor in to speak, and he was explaining the gospel and how Jesus came for us. Jesus died. Now, I was a Methodist, so I did confirmation, and I know this stuff. Backwards and forwards. I am confident in how to repeat the gospel message to you. But for whatever reason, as this man, Pastor Kaplinger, began to tell stories about Jesus, his coming into this world, his death, his burial, resurrection, ascension, and how through faith in him, I can have life. For whatever reason, and maybe you in this room have had the same kind of story, I heard it for the first time. And so, like a good Methodist, we had what was called a decision room. Is anybody familiar with a decision room? Where after a service or something like that, you can then go back and follow up, and you can ask questions, and you can continue to talk. And so we had a decision room. It was the choir room at the time. It was a very small room, much smaller than the stage. And so I walk in backstage, I walk down, and I'm here. The pastor who spoke is here. Steve is here, and he's kind of sitting in a chair, and he looks up at me, and he said, "Why are on there?" Right as I got to that, not going to play that game. I call this the full verdict. And so I said to Steve, "I need to change." That was my line. "I need to change." And he looked at me and he smiled. And he has a sly smile. And he said, "I've been praying for that." And it was the first time I had ever heard of anybody in my life, for one, praying for me. Had no clue that people would pray for me. Had no idea that that was even a thing. And so he said, "I've been praying for that." And that was the moment that started the journey that gets me even to this place with you right now. A guy who would just bring me, spend time with me, and introduce me time and time again to Jesus until at one point I went, "I need to change." Now, had you asked freshman and sophomore Hans that question, I would have thought up until that moment that there was nothing, everybody can be a little better. But there was nothing core to me that was causing some level of issue that would require me to feel like I needed to change. And yet, it was at that moment of conviction, by God's grace, that it began my walk. Steve lived like I mattered to God. He lived like I mattered to God. And he structured his time and his Tuesdays and his pre-Tuesday drive to demonstrate that care to me. We want and are praying that we are a church that lives every day. Men, women, and children, you here in this room live every day like people matter to God. Because stories have names. And I bet anybody here who is in the faith has a name or names of people who have been a unique person in them coming to faith. As we consider our series, Good Neighboring, I get to start out by kicking off an idea that good neighbors give of themselves. Now, this is nothing new. In fact, even unbelievers give of themselves, right? Somebody who doesn't know Jesus will still give their time and give their energy. A person who is not a Christian, who is a mother or a father, is still going to pour their attention into their children and their affection. And so when you say give of themselves, we're going to have to give a specific way, talk specifically about what does that mean. And to do that, we're going to be in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, but right before that, we're going to get to the background, which is Acts chapter 17. So we'll begin in Acts 17, we'll move to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and in this, we will see several ideas. One is what good neighbors do, that they bring truth to hard places. One is that they seek God's approval. Now, we're going to talk about that specifically when we get there. And then that they accept responsibility
for those in their care. I had a shorter line then, but you get the longer line. They accept responsibility for those who are in their care. Truth in hard places, they seek God's approval. The parentheses there is not man's. And they take responsibility for those in their care. I'd like for you to turn to Acts chapter 17, and as you are turning, I'll give a definition we have used for good neighbor in our Dream Disciple. A good neighbor is one who loves unbelievers with intentional gospel conversations and opportunistic service, ways in which to engage them, looking for opportunities to engage them. So Acts chapter 17 is where we will begin. Good neighbors bring truth to hard places, and we will be all the way through 17:1 through 17:9. This gets us to Thessalonica, okay? 17:1 through 9. Paul's second missionary journey. Now, when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. And Paul went in, as was his custom, and on three Sabbath days he reasoned with them from the Scriptures, explaining and proving that it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead, and saying, "This Jesus, whom I proclaim to you, is the Christ." And some of them were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a great many of the devout Greeks, and not a few of the leading women. But the Jews were jealous, and taking some wicked men of the rabble, some rabble-rousers, they formed a mob, set the city in an uproar, and attacked the house of Jason, seeking to bring them out to the crowd. And when they could not find them, they dragged Jason and some of the brothers before the city authorities, shouting, listen to this, "These men who have turned the world upside down have come here also, and Jason has received them, and they are all acting against the decrees of Caesar, saying, 'There is another king, Jesus.'" And the people and the city authorities were disturbed when they heard these things. And when they had taken money as security from Jason and the rest, they let them go. This gives you your background that good neighbors bring truth to hard places. Paul and Silas were there, and they went to Thessalonica, and they preached. Now you have to think, there's another king, Jesus, not Caesar. That line is because in the Roman world, Caesar, the emperor, was king. And was divine-like. His authorities and his rules would go. And so in the Roman world, if you were of the Jewish faith, you were sort of grandfathered in because it had history with it. And a historical faith was an important faith for the Roman culture and was also a good and smart way to assimilate. Because what it would mean is as you expanded your governing influence, you would say, hey, it's fine for you to be Jewish here. We're not going to ask you to change and be not Jewish. You have a lot of history. And so it was a way of creating favor from the emperor, for the emperor. But this Christian thing was different. Even though it was Jewish in its origins, it was different because it was bringing about a different thing. And there was a communication about who Jesus was and what he has done that was so transformative for people that it seemed new, as in it has never shown up before. Well, we know with the death, burial, resurrection of Jesus and his ascension and sending of the Spirit, we know there is a new element, which is the Spirit moving in power through his church. The truth in hard places happens because in 17:1 through 4, we have that truth. Verse 3, explaining and proving that it was necessary for Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead. This Jesus whom I proclaim to you is the Christ. Now we see some were persuaded, but others were not. Truth in hard places also means what comes after. There's a mob, the rabble-rousers, and the mob gets stirred up. And they actually persecute the converts there in Thessalonica. And they go and they take Jason, who was holding these people at his house. Because very often when there was a conversion, there would be some kind of sympathetic person who had a home, and they would begin to host the work of the church. Right before this, it was Lydia in Philippi. And so we have stories of God using the homes of people for gospel expansion. Sound familiar? Right? Using the homes of people for gospel expansion. He didn't go, sorry, haven't done the laundry, can't come over. No, come over, share. So they knew that people were causing trouble, and I put trouble in air quotes, but people were causing trouble, and the trouble was happening at Jason's house. And so they take them and hold them until they get payment. What does that sound like to you? We'll let you go if you pay. Sort of sounds like a bribe to me and lets you go along your business. But what they did is they actually sent Paul and Silas away. Now, the church there continued to thrive. But it didn't thrive without persecution coming. People were very mad at the Thessalonians for following Jesus. I will say for many of us, the physical harm that might come from proclaiming Jesus is far lower than the physical harm that might come to somebody in Thessalonica for following Jesus. The greatest harm many of us fear we have when it comes to preaching Jesus is our reputation being changed. Well, if your reputation is already for not following Jesus, then I'm okay with that. But then also, what if I lose my job? Like, at the very worst, it's very often people going, what if I lose my job? What do you think Paul or Silas would say to that person? It's glory. Then you lose your job for proclaiming our King. So even as you think about this, and we think about the background of the Thessalonian church, there is truth for you to bring, brother or sister, this morning, into places where it is needed. And you cannot determine the receptivity of that person or those people to the message that you bring. That is God's and God's alone. But just because soil might seem hard, it does not remove us from the responsibility of bringing truth to places where it needs to be brought. And I bet if you're like me, you have times in your life where you know by the prompting of God's Spirit, or simply because you know in God's Word, which would also be the prompting of God's Spirit, that you should speak up, speak out, encourage, or correct, and you don't. But if you look throughout the book of Acts, you will find words like boldness or courage or proclaim, which is the work of a good neighbor. So good neighbors bring truth to hard places. That gives us the idea and the background of what Paul was doing when he preached to the Thessalonians. He left the Thessalonians and did not return. And the reason he did not return is because God had other work for him to do, and so he continued to do that work, following the Lord wherever God's Spirit would lead. But he wanted to so badly go back, didn't he? When you see God change somebody, some group, some church family, some aspect of life, there's a longing in you to go back and see them. I saw a dear friend of mine and his wife for the first time in 2 years in June. And it was so good to spend what became one dinner, one lunch, and I think one dinner. Like, just to spend a little bit of time with them. It was so good. But in between that was 2 years. Paul wanted to get back. Well, when he wanted to get back but could not, what would he do? He would write a letter. And the letter would be his way of bringing his presence and his care and his concern to this church, even though he couldn't be there. And in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and 1 Thessalonians is also an early book written by Paul, we have Paul speaking to them both about the way he served with them while he was with them and the responsibility that he took for their care. Verses 1 through 6, we will see good neighbors seeking God's approval. And in that, I mean living where you could please God or man, they have made a choice to live their lives in a way that pleases God, not man. Look at the reputation that he holds, or the way he holds himself amongst the Thessalonians, starting in verse 1. For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. We just read that in Acts 17. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, prior to that, Philippian jailer, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict. For our appeal, that would be the desire to see people converted, changed, transformed, does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not to please man, but to please God who tests our heart. Now, I want you to stop there, and I'll put my finger there because I have the mic here, so I got to kind of be like this today. But I'm going to stop right there at the end of verse 4. I don't want to please man, but I want to please God who tests hearts. And there's something there for us to remember who sees us more surely than man. God. Man cannot test hearts. Because it doesn't matter the kind of person I present before you today, I could be a hypocrite. How often when you see some leader, some friend, some family member fall, do you go, I had no idea. I had no idea. I had no idea. Paul is not entrusting himself to men and women for his reputation and his method, but he's entrusting himself to God because God knows him fully and deeply. And so he says that as a reminder, say, when we came with our attention and our affection to please God because God knows us. He sees us, and he can actually test the purity of our intent, our desire, and our ministry. So now look at verse 5. For we never came with words of flattery. Oh, you Thessalonians are so good. As you know, nor with a pretext for greed, please pay us. God is a witness. Nor did we seek glory from people. Tell us we're doing fine, whether from you or from others. Though we could have made demands as apostles, we were gentle. Oh, I got to stop right there. I was getting a little ahead of myself. We could have made demands. What is happening in that? Payment. Though we came among you and we could have served in specific ways, we chose not to take from you what we could have because we wanted our ministry amongst you to be seen by you as pure. Now, Paul was not afraid of raising money from churches. He would raise money from churches for other churches. He would take offerings and bring them to Jerusalem. He would actually... It was really funny, if you're in our Bible reading and you read 2 Corinthians recently, he actually kind of pitched the generosity of one congregation against another. It'd be like, hey, you at Harvest, I really know you're generous, but can you believe what Northside gave? I cannot wait to see how much you give once you realize how generous they were, because I'm sure you'll be more generous. Like it's almost like that as you read 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. He's trying to say, I know you'll be more generous. And so he'll write, he'll raise funds, he'll do these things, but as it came to his ministry in Thessalonica, he knew that his ministry there would be marred if he chose to take payment from them. And his motivation was, what honors God? And in that context, payment would not honor God. He wanted more than anything else to honor God. And what did he get for that? Persecution, being run out of town, and no flattery whatsoever. Now, I'll do this sometimes even in my own marriage. Sometimes in a weak moment, maybe to Jesse or Andrew or some other person, I'll go, hey, I'm doing a good job, right? Like, am I doing a good job, right? When you get these huge moments of insecurity, I know I'm the only one here who feels it, but when you get these huge moments of insecurity and you go, am I doing okay? Are you proud of me? And it was almost like Paul was going, we set our sights solely on God's view of us and let anything else fall away. Even when we had a right to bring about and exact or demand something from you because of our authority. We did not do it. You'll get to that motivation in the second half. Because good neighbors first seek God's approval, and good neighbors accept the responsibility of those in their care. These are absolutely related ideas. Absolutely related ideas. And what you're going to see, and I love this, is Paul says to them, I was kind of for you like a mom and a dad. And he gives both. And he talks about his behavior amongst them in both ways. And I love the paternal language and the maternal language because very often the closest bond you have in regard to care is that between a parent and a child. And that, for the Thessalonians, was the identity, the way he operated among them. Verse 7, we'll say gently, he ministered gently like a mother. But we were, what's the word? You can read it, gentle among you. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. That was one way that he operated amongst the church. And his affection for them was so strong. We read this in verse 8. And when we read this at the elder retreat, we thought, we think this is and we want this to be more of who Harvest is. Verse 8, so being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves. Because you had become very dear to us. So let me take you back to my high school time. The gospel of God and our very own selves, because you had become very dear to us. At my moment of change, and sometimes I go, well, was it really in fifth grade when I heard the gospel, or was it in 10th grade when I was there at the moment? All I know is at that moment with Steve, my life got set in a different trajectory. There were two men who were a part of that story, though, and others as well who were probably praying. One was the pastor who was speaking, and one was Steve. The pastor who was speaking, I have seen one time in my life and one time only, as far as I know. He could not pick me out of a crowd, nor could I pick him out of a crowd. But there was a man in that room who was so affectionately desirous of me that he not only went to share the gospel of God, but himself as well. There will be people in our lives who have a unique opportunity to transform us. God uses them in order to do that. And then there are others, like Paul here with the Thessalonians, who just labored and cared and loved and shared. Now, this is a funny verse for me. You know why? Because not only the gospel of God, but our very selves also. Why do you put a but after not only the gospel of God? Many of us would think that's the most important thing you have to do, is share Christ with people. So why do you say also us? It's because the Christian life, or the message of the gospel, has two things. It's demonstrated and declared. Sharing not only the gospel is the declaration. Christ died for you. Christ loved you. Christ gave himself for you. Christ rose. Through faith in him, you can have your sins forgiven. That's the declaration of the gospel. But there's also the demonstration of the gospel. How does this work out on a Wednesday afternoon on a tired day? How does it show itself around the dinner table? How does it show itself with your actual next-door neighbors, the people who live right beside you or across from you or behind you? How does it show up then? And so our very lives also is a way of being able to be that example and that model for somebody so they might live more fully for the Lord. And honestly, what better example to give than a maternal one? Now, I don't know how this goes in your house, but I'm going to take a swing at something. My guess is, in general, husbands don't go to their wives and say, hey, you could have been a little nicer to the kids. I think your tone could have been a little gentler there. Maybe sometimes. I get it. I'm not speaking in absolutes, but as far as I have seen it and I have heard it, very often it goes towards, hey, Hans, you know you didn't have to sound like that, right? Many moms or people who serve in maternal roles don't have to be taught to be gentle. It's a part of them. And so when Paul is speaking about the way he gave his entire life, he uses the illustration that is the most strong to connect, but he's applying it to himself. I served with you like this. And then he flips to the intentionality that he has, like a father. And look at the words that are used like a father, because they're kind of fatherly words. For you remember, he's talking about the way he labored, our labor and our toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you, meaning providing for their own needs, while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. So our behavior amongst you was that we would work, we would make tents, we would gain our income in other ways so that we would not be a burden amongst you and could give you what you absolutely needed. Then, he says, you are witnesses. And God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers. For you know how, like a father with his children. Now look at these words. We exhorted each of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. I call this the good neighbors take responsibility for those in their care, because all of you have a sphere of influence, a place God has placed you specifically. Now, you might be thinking, okay, is that just my workplace? No, if you have children, that's part of your sphere of influence. If you have a workplace, that is part of your sphere of influence. If you live in a domicile of any kind, be it an apartment, a house on a street, a condo, pick it, that is a sphere of influence, and God put you there. And in placing you there, there are people in that circle who do not know him, be it your family, be it your street, be it your workplace. These are people God has entrusted to us. He's entrusted them to us to care, to share the good news, and to give of ourselves for their good. So as we finish, I want to let you know about how we have been and how we want you to participate in this idea of being a good neighbor. The front rowers are going to have a bit of a problem. My apologies to you, because you have no seat backs. So we'll figure that one out in a second. But in your seat backs, you'll find this little card. It's a simple card, okay? If there are spaces, just give them to your neighbors, right? Just give them to the people in front of you. Looks like there's a lot of room there. This card just says, good neighbor, living like people matter to God. That's all it is. On the back of it are three blanks. Three blanks. Our question to you as we step into this new world is, who are you moving toward specifically? Who are you moving toward specifically? Not my neighbors. Which neighbor? Give them a name. You don't even say, not the Googers. Who in the Googer household? Try to get down to a name of someone in your life that you will move toward specifically. Now, when I say this, we are entering into this idea together. So there are a couple of things we want you to do with this before you just start filling things out, because you're putting your name on the line for something specific. Here's what we want you to do. First, as a good neighbor, you should pray daily for the people in your life who are far from God. Daily. That is one conversation with God that maybe no one else in their life is having. It's Steve looking at me and going, I was praying for that. And so for the people in your life who do not know the Lord, and if you can't pick four, pick three, not three, two, not two, one, you have at least one. And begin praying daily for that person. Not only that God would change them, but that God would use you to change them. Put yourself into the game. Say, God, use me for this. May you show me the opportunities that exist. So daily prayer, what does it mean? How are we defining this good neighbor initiative, which is how we're going to talk about it? Daily prayer for the people in your lives who are far from God first. This card, if you already wrote a name down, well, you have homework. Our request, and our elders have already been doing this since March, our request is that you would take that name and you would invite them into some aspect of your life. Take what you're already good at, being hospitable, and direct that towards somebody who doesn't know the Lord. Or as far as you can tell, you don't even know. You're not sure if they know the Lord. One a month. So whoever you write down for July, I mean, it's only July 5th. You can do it. It was funny. Where's Jason? We were in an elder meeting. Yeah, Jason, I'm going to tell your story. You're welcome. We were in an elder meeting. There was like 2 weeks left, 10 days left in the month of June. And he's like, I don't have anybody for June. I don't have, you know, I'm just going to have to, I lost June. And we're like, June's not over, man. Like, just ask somebody else. You forgot for 20 days or however long it was, just ask somebody else. And then at this last elder meeting, he just was like, oh, I did both of mine, June and July in one. And I was like, well, now you're showing off. The monthly invite could be to coffee, could be to dinner, could be to come over, could be to do yard work. I don't know what it is. It doesn't have to be invite them to church. That might be currently the last place you want to invite them. What's the first place you want to invite them? Now, this is not measured on them saying yes. We don't know how God is moving, what God is doing in any of those stories. So we don't measure success off of people accepting invitations. Because that puts us into the realm of God, and we're not God, and we can't control who might respond and who might not. So, daily prayer for the unbelievers in your life. Second, the invitation once a month. We'll give these to you every 3 months. This is my March, April, May one. This is my June, July, August one. I'm going to have to cross off July's because the and replace it. But this is my June, July, August one, because we started not at the break of a quarter. Kind of ruined it. But now I'm going to have to go through the quarter to get to it. So June, July, August. At our elder meetings, we just ask, hey, who are you inviting next month, and who did you invite this past month? Our request is that you would take, now my guess is most of you eat. Some of you don't. Most of you do. Take that name and just go, hey, could we just grab lunch? Love to learn more about you. There is no specific thing you have to do aside from inviting and getting to know that person. So this is what the card is for. The good neighbor card. Now somebody might go, you go, well, this is so weird. Right? Like, why would you do that? How would you? It feels forced. It's, honestly, I can tell you after March, April, May, June, 4 months at elder meetings having these kinds of conversations, nothing about it feels forced. In fact, the only thing we hate is that we have to be accountable, which is often what most of us hate. I don't want to have to tell you. I want to just let it be organic. I'm like, how's that going for you? I'm like, you know you said that to me a year ago, right? Like, a year ago we had that conversation. What have you done since then? It's like, nothing. Okay, well, let's shine a little light on the fact that we don't always live in step with what God wants, but His Spirit empowers us to be able to. So pray daily for the unbelievers in your life. Invite somebody into some sphere regardless of how they respond. You might go, well, I don't know 12 people. Then fine. Have the same person on your card 12 times. That's fine. There's no God's truth to how that needs to look. Some of you are going to have like, well, I'm going to do 5 invites a month. Fine, do 5. But you know what? Not all of us are baller. So we're shooting for 1. If you can do 5, do 5. But if you step into this, don't do 0. Because we all know we need to make those steps. Why? Because God made them toward us. Whoever Steve was for me, you can be for someone else. But it takes intentional move to see that come about. The third thing we want you to be able to do is that you would pursue as we offer them opportunities for training. As we head into the fall, we will have both a class called Handcrafted Calling, which is going to help you think about how God's uniquely gifted you and what you are going to do with that. How am I going to use this specifically in disciple making? We will have classes on how to share your faith because we know people need that. We will have classes on how to pray and build a prayer habit that is actually sustainable. And so as those opportunities come up, and they'll probably come up toward the end of July or beginning of August where you know where they are, we're going to ask you to take them so that you can create the foundation that this kind of life can be built upon. Who are you moving toward specifically? We don't know what God is working out in people's lives, but we do know what happens if we step out of them. So often when I meet with people and they tell me about how they're living, and I go, well, who's missing out? I ask this question all the time. Who's missing out because you're doing that? And they go, well, I don't know. I guess I'm missing out. And I go, what am I missing out on? And they go, oh, you're missing out on me being able to lead. You're missing out on seeing me do that. And I'm like, yeah. If you exempt yourself from some level of responsibility, it's not just you who misses out, but everybody around you misses out from benefiting by that. Do you want to withhold that from me or from other somebody else in your life, your spouse, your friend, your family, simply because you're not sure how it'll work out? You know, every time I've done this, they've gone, no, I don't want to do that. I go, great. Then what's next? For us as a church family, what's next is, who are you inviting in July? You don't have to tell us, but if there's some story, there's a number you can text that goes right to kind of our church text line. And you can say, hey, pray for this, invited this person. We would love to hear that. And this is step one of what we hope God uses over many months and years to build in us a church full of stories that in 2030 we're standing together and somebody can say, because of Jaden, I'm here. Because of Marty, I'm here. Because of Pat, I'm here. Because we chose to disrupt our lives enough to show somebody else that they matter to God. So consider that name, and let me pray for us as we begin.